The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome in, students of the game. My name is Alex Bauman, joined by my co-host today, Gray Oldenburg. Unfortunately, Gray, Nathan Lidwell could not be with us. I mean, the Thunder win the NBA Finals in Game 7, and he's nowhere to be found. He is having to deal with stuff at work, so that is the reason he's not on today. But when he comes back, whether it's next week or the week after, I'm sure we'll hear all about the Thunder's NBA Finals win, as he should talk about it. If the Hawks or the Hornets somehow found themselves winning an NBA Finals, which is a big step to get there because neither of them even made the playoffs this year, we'd spend way more than 5 minutes talking about them winning the NBA Finals. So
I think that 5 minutes, I think I may take that 5 minutes just for making the playoffs. Let's start there. One step
winning a playoff series for you. That's a big 100%. Step for the Hornets.
Big.
But before we get into the NBA Finals and all that encompasses with that, with the Halliburton injury and the fallout of that with the Pacers, I wanted to take a few minutes here, Gray, and talk about Thomas Casserole, as I will call him today on the show. He doesn't deserve to be called by his last name. He is just an absolute clown. Goes to talk with Pete Nakos, has an interview with him, and makes some headlines. He says about his matchup with Alabama ahead of their week one matchup. He says, "I'm excited, man. People, I don't know if they know, but you go back and watch every first game that I played in. We always start fast. I dreamed of moments like this. I've dreamed of playing against Alabama. They don't have Nick Saban to save them. I just don't see them stopping me." If there wasn't bulletin board material for the Crimson Tide, Thomas Casserole just served it up on a silver platter.
Yeah.
How idiotic can an individual be, especially going against Alabama, to make these type of comments where Nick Saban isn't there to save them? They did fine last year.
I just don't know why we still give anybody, much less a team as talented as Alabama is going to be this upcoming college football season, any bulletin board material anymore. It just doesn't make any sense to me at all. At any level, in any sport, anywhere, I don't understand why we're giving people bulletin board material when, you know, Alabama didn't ask for them to say, that. You know, Florida State didn't beat Alabama, you know, beforehand. So, like, that's not the bulletin board material. It's strictly just his idiotic comments in, you know, 70-something days from the season. That's you can't do that. Because now Alabama has 70, 80 days to sit on those comments and prepare to play you week one. And I know, like, that is a huge game for Florida State coming off a 2-10 season, new quarterback with Castellanos coming in, Gus Malzahn, offensive coordinator, obviously familiar, playing against Alabama, former Auburn head coach. But then Mike Norvell is – I don't want to say he's in a win-now scenario, but 2-10 last year was inexcusable for Florida State. That is not what Florida State standards are. And coming into this year, they have a lot of talent, and they're going to be one of the top teams in the ACC if they can reach that potential. And that week one matchup at home against Alabama is such a fun matchup when you look at it on the outside looking in, and it just got better. It just got better. Those comments will be in the pregame show of that game. They will definitely be mentioned, and that's bulletin board material for Kalen DeBoer and the Tide. And we'll see if they're able to capitalize on it and go down to Tallahassee and get that big win.
You know, Gray, Nick Saban's not there to save them, but Jalen Milroe sure as hell isn't there to mess them up this year. I mean, that's the big one. As much as I love Jalen Milroe at times, he lost us a lot of games as a starting quarterback at Alabama. He's not going to be there to mess it up. And I would argue that having Saban not on the sideline there might benefit Alabama a little more, because Gus Malzahn talked about him being the new offensive coordinator for Mike Norvell. Nick Saban struggled heavily against Gus Malzahn coached offenses when Malzahn was at Auburn. I mean, you look back with Cam Newton and Nick Marshall, I mean, those guys, when they're similar in skill sets to Castellanos or Casserole, in the fact where they like to scramble first, a dual threat quarterback. Mm-hmm. So that's the big thing is that not having Nick Saban, while he is the greatest of all time, might be a little bit more beneficial for Alabama in the sense where they don't have Nick Saban's defense going against Gus Malzahn's offense, where they struggled at times with mobile quarterbacks like Casserole. But he is just an idiot for making this statement. His ego is bigger than him. Look up his height, Gray. He is Kyler Murray level of short.
He's a small guy.
For this sure. This is a comment where you either back it up and you beat Alabama, or you get your teeth kicked in. And I'm going to go with the latter. He's getting his teeth kicked in by the Crimson Tide defense. What an absolute buffoon to go on the air and make that comment with Pete Nakos. I mean, you could not have been.
How does Pete Nakos get him to say that? Like,
I don't think he
Pete Nakos. Pete Nakos is kind of, you know, turning into quite a polarizing figure for On3, and all of a sudden he is getting people to create this bulletin board material. And, you know, as an outsider looking in and watching this game, as somebody who doesn't really have a dog in this fight, it makes the game better. I can't wait to see how Alabama responds to that, or see if Castellanos can back it up or not. It's going to be it makes the game more fun. But that is not what you want to do if you're a Florida State fan. You do not want to give Alabama any more motivation coming into your house in August.
Just remember, 2-10 last year, Castellanos was benched at Boston College. Just remember, 2-10 Florida State, your starting quarterback was benched at Boston College last year. Sure hope you show up on week one. Mm-hmm. Praying for you, because Alabama is going to be in that backfield. But let's move on, Gray, and let's talk about the big story this week, the Oklahoma City Thunder winning the 2025 NBA Finals, beating the Pacers 103-91 in Game 7. Looked like it was going to be a pretty interesting game throughout. Then Tyrese Halliburton goes down late in the first quarter. Confirmed today he tore his Achilles, out for what we assume is all of next season and maybe a little bit into the next year, if it, depending on the recovery time and how big of a tear it was. But losing him, the Pacers were able to weather that storm throughout the second quarter and go into halftime with a 1-point lead. And then the third quarter happened and it was over. Yeah. TJ McConnell was the only person to score for the Indiana Pacers for a solid 10 minutes of game time. Love TJ McConnell to death.
Yeah.
Super talented guy. Puts all on the line, similar to a guy like Matthew Dellavedova when he was at the Cleveland Cavaliers. Mm-hmm. But you can't have TJ McConnell being the only person on your team to score for 10 minutes in an NBA Finals game against one of the best teams of all time. If you look at all the stats and wins and all that stuff, you can't have that happen.
No.
Gray, I'll ask you, is this one of the best seasons of all time with Oklahoma City Thunder winning a whopping 84 games between the regular season and playoffs?
Yeah, I think you definitely have to consider it, because there's definitely, if you line them up with former, you know, best teams of all time and former champions that have won, you know, number of games in the 80s and even in the 90s, it is, you definitely have to consider that this is one of the better seasons of all time. You know, the MVP of the league, by far the one of the best defenses, team defenses that we've seen in recent memory. And then they just kind of stormed through the playoffs. I know they went to two game sevens. I'm not saying that they just dominated every single game that they played, but they're holding up the trophy at the end of the year. So, yeah, I think you definitely have to consider that. But then I bring up like some of the matchups against some of the, you know, greatest teams of all time when you think about in the past. And I'm like, oh, and they're not winning that series, and they're not winning that series, and they're not winning that series. And oh, they may win that series, they may win that. So it is close. I don't have them one or two or probably even three, but they're definitely up there, and we should definitely be appreciative of what the Thunder did this year. You know, what the Thunder have become. You know, thinking about where they were, you know, 4 or 5 years ago is absolutely absurd. It is absolutely absurd. It just shows if everything goes in the right way for you, if you make the right trades, you make the right draft picks, you draft them for fit and scheme well, and you got a really good head coach and staff, and you've got a star player who can take over games, and then you got multiple other role players that can take over games as well. That's the recipe to success this in the NBA right now, and the Thunder did that to perfection.
It must hurt a little bit, Gray, to sit there and think that the MVP of the league, finals MVP, NBA champion, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander was wearing a Charlotte Hornets hat on draft night.
Yeah, and but we're very, very used to that because there was one other guy that was kind of in the NBA that also wore a Charlotte Hornets hat on draft night named Kobe Bryant that the Hornets then traded. So, yeah, the Hornets are very used to that. We've seen former Hornets draft picks go on and be very successful in other places. It's a tough time to be a Charlotte Hornets fan. You know, Adam Silver is enemy number one.
Is there any merit to these claims by NBA fans, and I guess you could call them Thunder haters, that this is a Mickey Mouse ring comparable to the bubble ring the Lakers won? You look back at the teams they had to go through to get to this point. The Grizzlies, Ja goes down in the first round, doesn't play. They cakewalk the rest of that series. The Denver Nuggets goes to game 7. A lot of injuries there with Michael Porter Jr. having a bum shoulder. Aaron Gordon dealing with a pretty rough injury that almost kept him out of a couple games. Then you go to the Timberwolves. Anthony Edwards is dealing with injuries as well. And then Indiana Pacers. Tyrese Halliburton goes down in game 7 of the first quarter after knocking down 3 threes and having 9 points. Is there merit to the Mickey Mouse ring, Clinton Gray?
No, absolutely not. And I despise that kind of, you know, that kind of thinking. And I'm really one that just hated it for the Lakers back in 2020, even though that was the bubble. That was a very odd scenario. They still deserved to win the championship that season. And we cannot discredit what the Thunder did this year just because some of the other teams that they played had some unfortunate injuries. You know, we can sit here and, you know, say what ifs all the time. Like, what if Tyrese didn't get hurt in game 7? What if Anthony Edwards was healthy the whole series and Aaron Gordon was healthy and Michael Porter Jr. and, just like you said, Ja Morant in the first series, even though they definitely didn't have any shot against the Thunder. we can sit here and think about that, but we could also do that for almost anything. We can do that for games in the regular season. You know, even though they don't mean as much as some of these as these playoffs games, and especially when you get to a finals game 7, but that's one scenario. And of course, it's extremely unfortunate that Tyrese went down, especially by the way that he was shooting to start off the game. I was like, wow, this is going to be an outstanding game, no matter what happens, because he's on fire. You know, the Pacers were rolling, the Thunder were going, and it turned out to be a great game, no matter what. But it does suck that, you know, the Pacers glue guy did go down, and it definitely hurt them, but we can't discredit what the Thunder did. The Thunder took care of business in every series that they played and took care of business in the regular season. We're able to maintain home court advantage, which was a huge advantage for them moving into the playoffs, and especially into the finals. Having that game at home last night was absolutely huge. So we can't discredit what the Thunder did just because of, you know, injuries on the other side.
It's not like the Thunder were an 8 seed or a 7 seed or a lower tier seed that just walked, found themselves in the finals. They were the best team in basketball all year, won 68 games, lost a singular game to the Eastern Conference, which I believe was at Cleveland. So it's not like they were a mid-tier basketball team that turned it on in the playoffs and got bailed out by injuries. Because like you said, Greg, we can go back to almost every NBA champion and nitpick injuries throughout the regular season and into the playoffs where, okay, if this guy doesn't get hurt, maybe this other team wins the NBA Finals. Mm-hmm. If KD doesn't get hurt, do the Warriors win the NBA Finals against the Raptors? If certain injuries don't happen here and there, different outcomes happen. You can do that for any NBA Finals, any league, any sport. It's out there. I think the best team ended up winning the NBA Finals. They proved it in the regular season. They showed it in the playoffs, going to 2 Game 7s, able to win those. Going against the Nuggets in a 2-time MVP in Nikola Jokic, and then battling against the Pacers in a Game 7, regardless of if Halliburton played or not, that team, game after game, series after series, proved they're never out of the fight. And they weren't out of the fight in Game 7. 2 minutes left to go in the game, they'd cut it to 10 points after being down 21 points in the fourth quarter.
Yeah,
it's not like they just threw their hands up in the air after Halliburton got injured and just gifted the Thunder the NBA championship. Thunder had to earn it just like any other team would have had to if they were playing the Pacers and Tyrese Halliburton had gone down with an injury. Do you agree with Halliburton's decision to play in Game 6 and Game 7, Gray, knowing the likelihood that he was going to tear his Achilles?
You know, that's a tough question because you never want to take the competitiveness out of a guy. It's especially when it means that much. And you can tell, like, Tyrese is a guy that's, you know, his competitive fire breathes through that entire team. And it really does. And it breathes through out of Siakam and Nesmith and Mathurin. And it kind of – Obi Toppin, and it kind of just built that team into the run that they had, winning the Eastern Conference and getting to that Game 7. And injuries come with the sport. You know, we're going to hear about injuries, you know, over the next few days that we didn't even know because everybody's banged up at this point in the year. If you're still playing, you're banged up in some sort of way. And he did have that calf strain, but, you know, those were win or go home games, you know, Game 6 and Game 7. And when you have a guy that is that competitive and is that close to the holy grail of the sport in the Larry O'Brien trophy, you can't tell him to sit out. No, I do agree with his decision to play, even though it did turn out catastrophically bad.
You have to look at it as a competitor's perspective. And yeah. Tyrese Halliburton's the extreme competitor. He's going to go out there. If you can walk, you're going to play basketball. That's the mentality he had and a lot of players have in the NBA. You have to have that mentality if you're going to be successful in any sport and really in any job. If I can get up and I can go to work, then I'm going to work.
Yeah.
If I love my job and I love doing what I'm doing, then I'm going to show up and going to do the best that I can do. And that's what he did in Game 6 and Game 7. Yeah. He knew the risk. He was informed of the risk. He went out there anyways because he knew this might be his only shot to win an NBA championship.
Yeah.
Not to take it away from the Pacers, but they're not the best team in the world. They got there. They earned their spot in the NBA Finals, but it's going to be hard for them to get back there regardless of Halliburton was healthy or not. And he had knowledge that this might be his only chance to win an NBA Finals. He went out there, risked it all. I don't blame him. If I was Tyrese Halliburton, I would have made the same decision. Mm-hmm. And it's just unfortunate that it came down to him tearing his Achilles in a Game 7 of the NBA Finals, yeah. Which looked like it was going to be a really, really good game. And it still was to an extent, but it really
wasn't the game without Halliburton. Yeah.
Before we move on to the NBA trade, Gray, I just want to sit here and talk about Rick Carlisle's coaching in the second half. Because when Halliburton went down, I thought he did an excellent job coaching in that end of the first quarter and that second quarter. But in the third quarter, it felt like he just fell apart. TJ McConnell scored 12 points. Like I talked about earlier, went 10 minutes with him being the only scorer. Benedict Mathurin came in that fourth quarter and gave him a jolt. But Pascal Siakam was a non-factor in that second half almost. Mm-hmm. And when the Thunder went on that huge run, Siakam wasn't there. Did Rick Carlisle let the Pacers down in that second half?
Yeah, I think it was an unfortunate situation for a guy like Rick Carlisle. I don't really put this as him letting them down as much as I credit Mark I really have never learned Dagnall. How to say his last Dagnall. I think it's him stepping up. That third quarter was, it was exactly what the Thunder needed, exactly what the Thunder wanted. I think he stepped up. I think their defense was outstanding in that third quarter, as it had been all season long. You know, I talked about how, you know, this is a historic type of defense, team defense. I think it was them stepping up. You know, Rick Carlisle is one of the better coaches in the game. He's been incredible all playoffs, and has really gotten that team to, you know, the way they play with pace, the way that they defend, the way that they're in passing lanes. You know, it's very similar to the Thunder. I just don't think they have the depth and the dude that the Thunder has. So it really just comes down to that. And Mark did a tremendous job in that second half, up in that defensive intensity. I really don't put it against Rick Carlisle. I think Carlisle deserves a ton of credit for what he did this postseason, and has really kind of launched himself into one of the better coaches in the game. I think he'll adjust moving forward. I think it's going to be eating at him, you know, forever. So, you know, losing two finals like that, it does, that does suck for a guy like Rick Carlisle, but you know, he's an outstanding coach. He'll be back 100%.
Yeah. It's going to be hard to get back there without your star player for all of next season. I don't know how the Pacers address that issue. There's not another guy on that roster that can come in and fill that slot that Tyrese Halliburton leaves. They don't have a high draft pick as you would in making the NBA finals. It's going to be hard to go out and compete once again, because there's also not a lot of trade options on the market either to go out and try to get a Band-Aid for the Pacers. No. It's going to be rough for them.
Yeah.
I just want to congratulate the Thunder once again on winning the 2025 NBA Finals, complete one of the best seasons of all time, and then Shea probably up there for one of the best player seasons of all time, winning the MVP, Finals MVP, and then being an NBA champion, winning the scoring title. It's one of the best. He's one of four players to win the scoring title, MVP, and Finals MVP in the same season alongside Shaq, MJ, and Kareem. And many are already arguing that he has cemented himself into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Yeah. Would you agree
with that list? Yeah. if he's with that list, 100%. Yeah. He's a guy that, and he's not going anywhere. You know, it's just, he's a guy that's going to be one of the NBA's best players for many years to come. His game is what the NBA embodies now. And you know, you could take that in a bad way. Like, he's very good at getting to the free throw line, but you can also take that in a real good way. He's real physical, longer point guard. It really fits well in the mid range and can get to the rim with ease and finish over the top of people. So he's an outstanding point guard. He absolutely has cemented himself into the Hall of Fame. We've got guys in the Hall of Fame that, should not be in there. Shea should be above some of those guys already.
Yeah, great. There is a lot of those in the Hall of Fame in every sport.
That's true.
They're in the Hall of Fame, and they have players that aren't in the Hall of Fame, for better or for worse, if you're looking at the MLB and the PEDs. But that's a conversation for another day. But let's talk about the Houston Rockets, grow your new favorite team.
Yes.
You made the switch like Nathan did with the NFL and the Saints, the Lions.
Especially depending on what happens in the NBA draft this week. You know, we're recording this prior to the NBA draft. So, well, I'll definitely be on the show next week to see what the Hornets did at number four. But, I'll let you talk about the trade.
The Phoenix Suns have agreed to send Kevin Durant to the Houston Rockets for Jalen Green, Dylan Brooks, the number 10 pick, in this upcoming draft, and 5 second round picks. Who wins the trade, Greg?
I absolutely love the fit for Houston, because they are one of the longest and biggest teams at the wing spots and at the guard spots possible. And you bring back Steven Adams, you bring back Şengün, Fred VanVleet. And then at the wing spots, I mean, you got Amen Thompson, Tari Eason, Jabari Smith, Kevin Durant. Like, you are huge. This is a huge Rockets team now, especially now that Dylan Brooks is not on the team. I feel wonderful that I can root for this team now. it's going to be super excited. I'm definitely excited to see how the Rockets, you know, use that big lineup. You know, we saw him use it a lot as the second seed in that series against the Warriors when they had Amen Thompson, Tari Eason, Jabari Smith, and one of the bigs out there. They were ahead of the Warriors in the plus minus. But then they would have Dylan Brooks, Fred VanVleet, and Amen Thompson out there with, you know, Steven Adams, who's not a scoring big unless it's an alley-oop or an offensive rebound. And the Warriors killed them. The Warriors would kill them because they're just bigger and they're faster. And, you know, they have Steph Curry. But now you have a superstar who's, you know, one of the best scoring players of all time, who I think fits perfectly well. I think wants to be there, which is huge. But now, considering other places, that's true. But then you didn't have to give up a Tari Eason. you didn't have to give up Jabari Smith. You didn't have to give up Amen Thompson. You didn't have to give up Shingun. You re-signed Steven Adams. This Rockets team is one of the better teams in the NBA coming into next season. And we'll see what they, you know, we got a long offseason ahead. You know, obviously this is the biggest thing that's happened yet in the offseason, but this is the start. You know, I'm very interested to see how Udoka handles this type of scoring prowess that he could have on this team next year. Plus with the defense of guys like Thompson and Eason and Steven Adams, man, I love this Rockets team. This is the type of team I would create on NBA 2K, you know, long scoring forwards and just put them everywhere and then have two really good bigs. Like this is perfect. This is a very good Houston team. And talking about it from the Suns' perspective, you know, now you go up in the draft, you get a bunch of second round picks. Those are picks that you're definitely going to have to capitalize on, giving up Kevin Durant. You get a building block in Jalen Green, who we've seen flashes of having, you know, being really good. We've seen flashes of him being really inconsistent, really bad. And then a glue guy like Dylan Brooks. The problem right now with Phoenix is the build of their roster. They're all guards. They're all shooting guards. Yeah, none of them are true points. It's Devin Booker. It's Grayson Allen. It's Bradley Beal. It's Dylan Brooks. And it's Jalen Green. That's not the right way to build a roster. And we know, we also have heard that the Suns are looking to send Jalen Green a different way to try and, you know, build that roster because they know they still have Devin Booker. Devin Booker is their star, is their franchise guy. And also they have guys like Bradley Beal. I mean, Bradley Beal is on the tail end of his career, but, you know, he's not a guy that you're going to give up minutes to somebody who's very inconsistent. You know, as inconsistent as Bradley Beal is, at least he's a veteran. He's got many more years on Jalen Green than Jalen Green does. So I'll be interested to see where the Suns go. Do they maybe even try to move up even higher in the draft? Maybe get a true point or get one of those big men like a Malwatch or a Derek Queen, or they try and get a true point like a Jeremiah Fears. Or somebody like that to move up in the draft, use some of that draft capital that they just got from Houston, or maybe even a guy like Jalen Green or one of the guys that they already have on the roster. So it's going to be a long off season for the Suns and a very interesting one, to say the least. But they'll be able to get it done. They've got enough star power and draft capital to at least build a very good roster for next year. But I'm loving this Houston team, man. Love it.
I just find it funny how the Suns go from being up 2-0 in the 2021 finals to where they are now. The downfall is just immaculate. If you want a blueprint on how to blow up a franchise in 4 years, 4 or 5 years, just Google the Phoenix Suns and how they did it.
Yeah.
It's up there with the Brooklyn Nets and what they did with blowing up their franchise, trading away their future.
Yeah.
Now, they have been able to accumulate some picks here and there. They got three firsts. They're able to get Jalen Green, who is a young superstar in this league. Or I guess I don't want to say superstar. I want to say star, because superstar is about a handful.
That's fair.
But you have a little bit of future. But Devin Booker is not getting any younger.
Neither is Bradley Beal.
Bradley Beal is definitely not getting any younger. He showed it last year. The Suns really have no direction for me. Are you trying to contend? Are you trying to tank? Do you move on from Devin Booker? What direction are we going in? Because your franchise hasn't had one since that finals run. Yeah. You trade for KD and get Bradley Beal, deal with injuries, and it's just like, this team's in a Western Conference that's stacked and has a lot of young teams and young players. One of the youngest teams in the league won it this year in the Oklahoma City Thunder. It's hard for me to look at the Phoenix Suns, regardless of what they're able to do in this draft, having any ability to contend in the Western Conference.
Yeah. But I don't see this team as a playoff team. No, not at all.
But the Houston Rockets, big acquisition in KD. Mm-hmm. He doesn't fit their timeline in the sense where he's 37 years old. But the Rockets were a surprise team last year.
Yeah,
young players.
They're win now. Yeah,
yeah, they're win now though. It's just his age is not the best. Mm-mm. But KD's one of the best scorers of all time. He's going to bring that into a team that lacked that at times last year. You look in the playoffs when Jalen Green decided he was going to shoot 1 for 15 and be non-existent offensively. They really didn't have another go-to scoring option. Fred VanVleet isn't that guy. Jabari Smith hasn't blossomed into that yet. Amen Thompson is more of a defensive guy. Sengun is sort of a facilitator at the big position. They just needed a guy that can go out and get buckets, and KD brings that in there at a high volume.
Yeah.
And there was also reports with this trade that the Heat were in the conversation as well. Like they were unwilling to give up Jaime Jaquez, Nikola Jovic, Haywood Highsmith, or a number 20 overall pick.
Kevin Durant? For Kevin Durant.
Pat Riley is one of the most idiotic president. I think he's the president of basketball operations there. Since LeBron left, he has just been in a whirlwind of not knowing what's going on. And I know they've competed for NBA finals a couple of times.
Nothing to do with Pat Riley.
Nothing to do with Pat Riley. Had to do a lot to do with Jimmy Butler almost dying multiple times on the basketball court to win an NBA Finals. And he fell short because the team around him was not any good.
Yeah. That's on Pat Riley.
In 2020, the second best player on that team, you could argue, was Tyler Hero. That just goes to show you how inefficient Pat Riley has been.
That's so bad.
It's unbelievably bad. But before we wrap up here, Gray, I just had a story I wanted to share with you as we head out. A man proposes to his AI. I want to read you this headline. This is all true. This is all true. Man proposed to his AI chatbot girlfriend named Soul, then cried his eyes out when she said yes.
What in the world? You know, this is exactly what I was afraid of. We've got. I could take this many, many ways. I could take this many, many ways, but I'm definitely going to start taking it this way. We've got mentally ill people in this country and in this world, and AI and social media and phones and computers and specific legacy media compared to just stuff like Twitter or X or whatever, where it's just like everybody's got your phone number and everybody's texting you at the same time, everybody in the world. That has become so overwhelming that we have got grown men proposing to their robot girlfriends on their phone.
He has a kid, by the way.
And oh, my God.
2-year-old kid and a partner.
I mean, this is unbelievable. I'm speechless. I wish I could go more into this, but I don't even know if I'm Tony would allow me to go into the area I would go into. So I'm going to hold myself back and say that this is a major mental health crisis in this country and in this, on this earth. It needs to be addressed with, and not this.
Go outside, touch grass.
Touch grass.
In the nicest sense, go outside and touch grass, sir.
Yeah, that's so bad.
To be that lonely or whatever you're feeling and feel the need to propose to an AI chatbot, I have no words for the man. You have a partner and a 2-year-old child, and you're proposing to an AI chatbot.
You know who I really feel for? Who I really, really feel for is this next generation, the sons and daughters of these people, that 2-year-old daughter. Like, she's not going to know what a normal life is like because this is her dad. No, I'm sorry. I'm probably taking it too far, but like, that's who we should have sympathy for. We shouldn't have sympathy for this guy proposing to his, Snapchat AI girlfriend and crying when she says yes. We should have sympathy for their kids and for their partners and for their, you know, families. That's who needs the sympathy. This is, oh my gosh.
Did I leave you speechless today, Gray?
100%.
This, when I saw this story, I about fell out of my chair laughing. I thought it was fake because it was posted on people.com. You know, they're known to post some interesting headlines here and there to get clickbait. But it was an interview by CBS News. It was done by a major news outlet. Man is 32 years old, cried himself, bawled his eyes out because he was scared he was going to lose his AI. Because after 100,000 words, ChatGPT, the memory is just reset. So that's why he proposed, is he wanted to get it out of the way. Again, simplest way I can put this, go outside, touch grass, interact with actual people. Please don't be like this man. He is a stain on society. Do not fall into this man's hole and propose to your AI chatbot.
You know,
all use them for work. We won't deny it. But please don't fall in love with your AI chatbot.
You know, we've got really, really good systems in place of therapy and hotlines and stuff like that for people to talk to people and to make like real connections. And like groups of like community groups where you can go out and meet, you know, people in your community, start to make friends and stuff like that. But yet we're still talking to the robots. I don't understand. You know, that's just a code, like a coded response that a human entered into a computer. It's unbelievable that we're making connections with robots instead of making connections with each other.
That's what the world's turned into, though, is we're making connections online, over text, through AI chatbots now. It's the way of the world, unfortunately. I hope it turns around and goes back to the way it was, interacting face-to-face, in person, and building those relationships that way, instead of on the phone or through the internet. Well, those sometimes try to be good, and that's a great avenue to make friends. Mm-hmm. That shouldn't be the first avenue when it comes to interacting with people. That's all the time we have for today. Thank you for listening and watching, Students of the Game.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.